Welcome to Power Rankings, presented by MotoXAddicts.com. I'm Chris Cooksey with my buddy Dan Lamb, and this is our weekly Power Ranking show. Find out who the 10 fastest riders are in both the 250 and 450 classes. In 30 minutes, we're going to get you caught up on everything going on in both classes, so you can look like the smartest guy at the track this weekend.
Dan, what's happening, dude? It's Chris. How you doing?
I'm doing all right, man. Just it's been a week about getting my daughter. She's now a cop, I guess. Not officially, but somewhat unofficially. She joined search and rescue this week, so I've been chasing her around. She went through a 10-day boot camp, full on, I guess, you know, rappelling, going out of helicopters. She's a full on search and rescue. And right before this podcast, I told her she needed to be quiet, and she said, "Sir, yes, sir." So it's worth the money.
Oh, that's great. That's awesome. Speaking of cops, man, I saw an actual shootout in downtown Las Vegas about a week ago. Man, I was at a shop and cops came by chasing a vehicle. As the vehicle leaned out and fired shots at him, I hit the ground. But yeah, another typical day in Vegas in 120 degree heat.
That's absolutely
temperatures run a little high.
The only place I've ever seen anybody in my life get shot was in Vegas. So I definitely believe what you're saying. I saw a cab driver get shot wrestling for a gun right in front of me. Yep. Right on Paradise and Dunes Boulevard, right at the corner there. I was pumping gas, and all of a sudden you see this wrestle match going on, and it gets loud, and the gunshot goes off, and the guy takes off into that first interstate building they have there. And cops got him later. I saw it on the news. But, yeah, the cab driver got shot with a gun.
Wow, that sucks. Yeah, and that dude's probably still in jail. You don't mess with cab drivers in Vegas. I mean, you do anything to those guys, they have – yeah, they don't mess around. So.
That's crazy. That time's
nuts. Well, the good thing about it was the only people that got hurt were the guys, the perpetrators. The cops did a hell of a job. But yeah, you might want to look it up on YouTube. It's fucking awesome. The cop was shooting out his windshield and took him down straight through it.
Nice. It's on YouTube. I will check it out.
Yeah, check it out. About halfway, look to your left. You'll see my truck parked out in front of MTC. Seriously, I made the video.
Oh, you're the one that uploaded it?
No. Oh. Dude, national news. But I just happened to see my truck in the national news.
That's awesome. Yeah. You're famous.
Yeah, officially made it. I've been on a police chase video. So anyway, yeah, and I wasn't being chased, so that's pretty awesome. So we'll get to our power rankings, and we're going to do this a little different. We're going to go through the 450s and the 250s, and what we're going to do is we're going to start at 10, and we're going to each discuss real quick on our guys, not too long, Dan, and we'll just see where we're at. So at number 10, I had Filthy Phil Nicoletti. Now, Phil, you know, he switched halfway through the year from the JGR bike to the Rockstar Husqvarna, and he looks like he's getting a little bit more comfortable. What do you think?
He's obviously getting more comfortable. I mean, he finished fifth overall last weekend, and he looked good doing it. He didn't look on edge. He just kind of was just riding like Phil, and he looked really comfortable in both motos. 5-5 in both motos backed him up. So, yeah, he's obviously getting more comfortable, and I actually have him at 10 as well. So I can't really argue with your pick here.
And I wouldn't be shocked if he got better than 10. I mean, like you said, he's – I really think he needed a change. He was at JGR for a long time, and he kind of fell into a rut. He was almost their whipping boy, but in a fun way. It's not like they were being a dick to him, but you know how it is when you've been at a job for a long time, and you just need a change of scenery just for the sake of change. I think that has really helped him, and I don't know. I hope he can find something for next year. Have you heard anything about him?
No, I haven't, but I think you're right about that, and I think he kind of fell into a rut where he didn't, I don't know, insecurities or what. He never had a real good ride before JGR. JGR gave him a ride. They paid him well. And he kind of fell into that fill-in role and never really felt like I felt like he didn't feel like he deserved more than that. And I think he really does. And I don't know anything about what he's going to do next week or next year, but Spring Creek's a lot like Red Bud. And you said you wouldn't be surprised if he did better than 10. I wouldn't be surprised if we see him right about where he was last week in 6th or 5th. I did put him 10th, but this isn't a prediction ranking. It's just kind of where I think he is in the 450 class right now. But I could see him moving up this, our rankings, if he keeps doing what he's doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And our rankings are based on just basically like overall strength, who we feel the strongest riders right now. Speaking of the strongest riders, I got Weston Pike at number 9, who I know who you have at number 9. Let's hear it.
Yeah, number nine, I got Benny. I feel like Benny isn't quite as strong overall as, say, Weston Peick or Justin Hill, who you put him ahead of.
Hold on. He got third in a moto last week. How is he not stronger?
He did get third in a moto, but guys like Justin's beaten. Let's just put him against Hill, who I have seventh. We won't talk about that yet, but Hill's beaten him in five of the seven motos he's finished. I believe Hill's stronger than him. Yes, Benny got third. He had a great moto. I don't see him backing that up, and he didn't back it up. He had a real bad second moto. So I don't see Benny better than the ninth ranked guy right now. I do think he can move up. I do think the third was a career ride. I don't see him backing that up anytime real soon.
Okay, you say he had a bad second moto where he didn't finish out very well, but he did finish. I mean, he was in seventh when he went down, and it was near the end of the moto.
Yeah, and that's about where I just
have a hard time
more
with number nine.
I see him more at a seventh place guy. The moto was awesome. I'm not going to take anything away from him. He did get a third, but I have him as my ninth ranked guy right now.
And you have him above my guy, Weston Peick.
I have him below Weston Peick.
That's what I meant. Okay, speaking of that, now let's go to number eight. Number eight in the 450 class, I have Justin Hill, who, gosh. See, I wasn't aware how bad his arm injury was, but at the same time.
He had a hole in it, yeah.
I just, man. Like I said, that guy could be third place, and he could be – God, I mean, if he actually got a whole shot in one, I would not be shocked. He's that good. But I just don't know what you're going to get from him. He has been good since he moved to the 450, but I'm not quite sold on him yet as far as a week-in and week-out guy. You know, every once in a while you're going to see magnificent performances, but not consistently. So that's why I have to have him at eight.
Yeah, but even with a hole in his arm, I mean, he finished fourth in Moto 2 last weekend. He's got two fours. That's like a problem with me is putting Benny Bloss ahead of him with one third place moto this year. I think Hill is solid. I think he's definitely someone who can get a podium. I would be surprised if he won. You said if he won, you wouldn't be surprised. I might jump out of my seat. He's one of my favorite riders. You know, I'm an Oregonian. He's an Oregonian. We're practically brothers at that point. But the 450 has been a complete turnaround for him. His career has mirrored his brother's, which is really strange how much it's mirrored his brother's. And I could definitely see Hill on the podium finishing overall, where I think I'd be more surprised if I saw Benny on the podium overall than if I saw Hill on the podium overall. And that's kind of why I put him. I actually went back and forth with that one, but that's why I put Hill above him.
Well, and when I say I wouldn't be surprised if he won, I would be surprised if he won, but I would be more surprised if Benny Bloss, Weston Peick, or Phil Nicoletti won, if that makes sense.
It does. Then why'd you put Benny Bloss above him?
Because Benny is consistently stronger. And now I will say, speaking of number seven, I have Benny Bloss at number seven. Now, Benny Bloss has been consistently about number seven every week. That's where he was at when he crashed. He did have a career ride and got third, and he got a little luck. But when you put yourself up there, race in and race out, you're going to get luck. So, and just like you cheer for Justin Hill, I'm 6'4". I cheer for the big man, big man moto. Is there anyone more underestimated than Benny Bloss? He's always up front. He's always fast.
He is completely
underrated.
Nobody
gives him any respect.
He gets none. He gets no respect. He's kind of the Shane McElrath of the 450 class, and I think that's kind of how his career is going to go. But, you know, it's anywhere from 6th to 10th. I could actually mix match any of those, and I wouldn't argue with you on any of those. So, I mean, where you put Hill, where you put Peick, where you put Bloss, where you put Cooper Webb, all those guys I feel are about the same pace right now, and all of them could break out and get a top five or even a podium in a moto, and it wouldn't surprise me. So yeah, all those guys, you could flip them any way you want to look at it.
And at seven, who'd you have?
At seven, I had Justin Hill. And since we already talked about him, I decided we'll leave it at that.
Fair enough. I just wanted to touch on it there. Your brother, man, from Oregon. So, and then we both had Cooper Webb at number six. So Cooper Webb, obviously he was very disappointing at Southwick. He got better last week. I think with the week off, the leg's going to get better. His cardio is going to get better. He wants to show those guys at KTM what they're going to get when he moves over there next year. I do believe we're going to see him battling around sixth, fifth, and maybe even near a podium, dare I say? What do you think?
I could see that happening. I think Spring Creek was one of his better motos last year. Better races last year. I think he finished in the top five. I'll pull it up here. Yeah, he got fifth. He's won there on the 250. He's beaten, you know, Alex and Jeremy Martin straight up there on the 250. He loves that place. I think if there's a place where he's going to have a great ride from here to the end of the season, where he might have a breakout ride, maybe finish in a second or somewhere near the podium, it's going to be definitely Millville.
Yeah, I totally agree.
He rails there. And I he really needs to do something right now. I know, you know, he's probably got it, you know, in the back behind the scenes, he's probably got something locked down. He's got a great agent and something going on, but he needs a big ride just for his confidence, for everything as the year finishes up. And I think Millville's got to be that spot.
Well, he needs to get what Jeff Emmett calls the base. He needs a base, even if he does, which I heard it's a done deal. He's already over to KTM.
Yeah.
But he needs that base heading into next year. You need some results to start, or, you know, he just doesn't seem like he'll be a contender if he doesn't get that. And we've seen time in and time out, the guys have to do that.
So, this next contract for him is going to be huge. I mean, it's going to be do or die for him, this next contract. Just talking a little. I know I talk too much, and you want it 30 minutes. But talking about Webb, I think this KTM contract, if it does come in, it's going to be so huge for his career. It's do or die for him. If he doesn't do well on KTM, I could see him riding off into the sunset.
Ooh, wow. Yeah, I don't know. It is important. And it's crazy. You keep saying huge, so I start thinking huge dollars when he's not going to get a lot of money. I would imagine he's probably just going to get a deal maybe a little bit better than Brock Tickle had, but he'll definitely – he's not going to break the bank. For a lot less money than he could have a year or two ago.
He definitely took a pay cut, no doubt.
Okay, so moving on, we're going to Blake Baggett at number five. We both have him at number five.
I think the rest of this, I think we're the same on the from number five up. I think we're pretty much the same, if I remember right.
Yeah, the 450 class is pretty locked down, one through five. But talking Blake Baggett, I'm going to let you go on this one. I'm disappointed. So, you know, and we both talked about this. So go ahead.
You have to be disappointed. I mean, especially after what happened last year, like a breakout year. He hasn't done anything, nothing to resemble like what happened last year. He's not breaking Tomac or breaking Marvin anymore. He's getting broke, and, you know, he's not getting the starts. He's not really moving forward that fast. Well, some places he has. But he's at no point in time. Can you remember him battling with Marvin or Eli this year at all?
I'm sure he has. But it doesn't come to mind. Last year when he was out there, I always knew where he was. El Chupacabra was coming.
Yeah,
and I love it when he's up there when he's good because he talks shit. And you know I love the talking shit, and I love people that stir it up. I do. I think it's good for the sport. I think the spectators like it. I think it fires up the other riders. I just think it makes for a better storyline. The sport's better when he's good.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, he's not. And I'm worried about that wrist. I really do feel like it's not getting better. And I don't know that it's going to at this age. And it really, really worries me if I'm in his camp.
I don't know if I'd worry that much about it. It seems like it's the same as it's always been. And by the way, earlier I made a mistake. I said Phil got 6'6", or 5'5". He went 6'6". Baggett went 5'5" last week. For fourth overall. I talked to Baggett right after he broke his wrist the year after at Hangtown, and he said it's his heels that's going to be. I talked to him a year later, and it was the same thing. He hasn't got any more movement. He hasn't got anything. It just is what it is. I don't know that. I think what it was this time last year when he was battling towards the front, or not this time, he was injured, but at the beginning of last year when he was battling for wins, I think his wrist is the same then as it is now. I don't know that it's much different just from what I've talked to him and from what I've heard. I mean, I could be wrong. He's not battling for wins and he was last year. I don't think it's a career ender, though. I just think it is what it is and he's got to deal with it. I think there's got to be something else going on there, something with the bike, something. Maybe he's struggling with another injury. You just don't lose that much from one year to the next And it seems weird. And he hasn't said anything to anybody, so I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, I guess we'll leave that one be. And then we'll get to Ken Roczen. What a great ride. He kind of lucked into it. But if anyone had luck coming, it's him, man. So he's looking strong. He's right there with those guys. Yeah, I had a hard time. Him and Barcia. I honestly almost put him ahead of Barcia, but Barcia's been riding so good. They're close. They're really, really close at 4 and 3. But, yeah, I don't know. Speaking of wrist injuries, think this week off will really help Ken, or is he just kind of where he's at for the season? What do you think?
I have no idea. I interviewed him not too long ago, and he talked more about his thumb being a problem than anything else. And yeah, I think the time off will help that. He didn't really get into why his thumb was the big problem. I think it's more like ligaments and stuff that were damaged in there. But I think everything with him right now is just confidence, fitness, getting his legs back under him, and just starting to believe. I don't think he lucked. There's no such thing as luck in motocross. He was there. He rode his ass off. And the big difference was a week before that, he was a minute behind these guys.
And one week, disagree. There's right a lot of luck in motocross, Dan. Come on.
No luck. You make your luck in moto. That's how I feel. No asterisks here.
Are you kidding me? Okay. I don't even know how to argue with that. That's crazy. That's crazy talk right there, dude. But I will say with his injury, a lot of times when you have a severe injury like that, and I've had quite a few injuries myself, and it's weird. You'll hurt one thing and something else because your body overcompensates. And it sounds to me like he's dealing with a little bit of that, because obviously he's had catastrophic injuries, and I'm sure there's quite a few things. It's going to take a while for his body to adjust to the changes that he's had to go through.
So. Yeah, I agree with that. And when I say there's no luck, I think, you know, if he's a minute back, it doesn't matter. You know, Marvin's going to catch him. You know, that's the biggest thing, is I think just with him, it's so much confidence and so much just feeling it right now and believing that he can still win and remembering how to win. As much as riding a bike is muscle memory, winning is muscle memory as well. It's so important for him to believe he can win. And I think he's starting to believe that, starting to remember. And a guy like him who's won his whole life, once he starts remembering, he doesn't forget. And I think we're going to see some real, just heads up, straight up, you know, beating Tomac, beating Musquin wins before this season's over. I really do. I think he needs it, and I think he really wants it before the season's done.
I don't know, man. The season's getting close to the end, and those guys are hauling ass. So I don't know if we're going to see that or not. But, you know, Justin Barcia, what a career resurgence. A year ago, he didn't have a ride. He was the odd man out, and now look at him talking about finishing his career with Yamaha. It's kind of the feel-good story this year.
It is.
Yeah, so, I mean, I had him at 3, you had him at 3, and, yeah, that's pretty much where I got it. I mean, he's right there about the same as Roczen.
He's turned around more than just his career in riding-wise, too. You know, like, I've been doing this since 2011. I've been covering the sport, interviewing these riders, chasing them down. And, I interviewed him a couple times early, and you could find him, but there was literally 4 years where you could not find Justin. You know, the race was over, he was gone. Nobody could interview him. Every once in a while, someone would catch him, Chase would catch him. I literally interviewed him once in 5 years for a while there. Now the kid, he's hanging out after races, he's hanging out with fans. Every time I see him after the race, he's signing autographs. I interviewed him at the Monster Cup when he showed up as a privateer, and he was a different person, and he was the easiest person in the world to talk to, where he used to be tough. And fans were all around him, and it's just gotten more and more and more, and he's really turned around just the way he interacts with media, the way he interacts with his fans, and his riding's obviously turned around. I think Justin's done more for his career in the last 8 months than he did the first 27 years he was alive, I think, or 25 years he was alive. He's done a lot for himself, and I think no matter what, he's going to end up on a factory team next year, whether it be Yamaha, whether it be someone else, and he's back to a 7-digit guy. And I think it's as much to do with his attitude as it does his riding.
Wow, kumbaya, Dan.
He's impressed me. I mean, it's been a really cool thing to watch. I've always liked his mom, but I've literally talked to his mom more than him over the first 6-7 years I did this. But he's an awesome dude to talk to now. He's easy to talk to, and he's media friendly, and it's showing his riding with the fans. If you go to a race like at Washougal, watch him. He'll be there signing autographs until 8 o'clock at night. It's incredible to watch, and it's cool to see. I just think that that he's done a lot for his career.
Yeah, I will say, I've never had any issues. Every time I've ever seen him, he did an event up at Western Power Sports a couple years ago when he wasn't having a good time, mm-hmm. and he was still extremely personable. Dude ran out, grabbed my bag, and threw it in the car for me. I was like, wow, that's pretty cool. So, yeah, I'm a big Barsha fan. I do think he gets a bad rap as far as having a – but he did do some stupid stuff, but he also owned it. So, anyway, yeah, number two.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. That's the main thing. He always owned it. Oh, go ahead.
Number two, the evil Frenchman, Marvin Muskin.
Is there a guy
more
Frenchman.
Vilified this summer? Did you see that picture, that numbnuts just flipping the bird to him at a red bud right to his face?
Yeah, that's awesome. You know,
listen, I would never be that guy, but that guy, I believe, has the right to do that. Don't touch Marvin. Don't throw anything on him.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You have the right. I mean, don't get me wrong. You're a dumb fuck. Sorry, you're an idiot if you do that. But you have the right to do that. I don't think he should be thrown out, and I think that Marvin should embrace it. And he did exactly. I mean, they're fueling him. He's winning, and he said something, laughed at the guy, and moved on. And it was pretty cool. I was stoked for Marvin, and it's got to be hard being in this country and having people do that stuff. I can't imagine. So
yeah, I love the guy, and you couldn't pick a nicer guy to hate. But this sport is weird. This sport, any sport you go to, there's people flipping off the team player, saying "fuck you" and "fuck this," and "I love this team" and "I hate this team," and you know, spitting on people that are wearing the other team's jersey and throwing popcorn at them, and you know, everybody cheers. And I think there's something in this sport where if you don't like a rider, you can't talk about it. And I don't get it. I love Marvin. He's the nicest guy in the world. But I think fans should be able to express their dislike for a rider without, you know, 10 vital forms blowing up. I think this is sport. You're allowed to cheer for your favorites and boo your non-favorites. And I don't get the whole, you know, you can't do that in this sport. I just don't get it. Don't be out of line, but
yeah, you don't throw anything at him. Yeah. You don't do anything to his wife. But if you want to just hang the bird at him when he's shaking hands with fans, like I said, it's low class. I'd never do it. But the guy has every bit. I mean, yeah. Go out there, WWE, have fun with it. You know, guy probably works a day job and works construction or something. He's just blowing off steam.
Yeah.
And that's why he bought his ticket and he gets to do that. So be it.
And to be fair, some people have some legit reasons not to like the guy. I mean, he moved over. He fixed a race. You know, Marvin's
what,
not whole, been perfect.
What? Come on. He didn't fix a race. KTM did. He did his job.
Yeah. All right. We'll argue job. About that another day. You want this to be a half hour. He did do his job.
Hold on.
He did
do
his job. But
speaking of luck, hold on.
To.
You say luck doesn't exist. Would Eli Tomac, was that bad luck that first moto?
Obviously. Obviously that was bad luck.
Wait, no, luck doesn't exist, Dan.
I think you make your own luck in this sport. Yes, that was bad luck. You know, your bike goes when you're leading and running away. He did nothing wrong there, obviously. It just, what else can go wrong for this guy? I mean, no matter what he does, he has seems to have a black cloud that makes every championship tough. No matter what he does, he just can't have an easy one. And
Eli is his own Chase format.
That's
he is.
I like
he'll
it.
Get a lead, and he, damn it, if he doesn't want us to be bored, he always does something to make it exciting, and he has since he started back in the 250 days. And damn it, I'm embracing it.
Yeah, I saw what you wrote the other day, but, you know, about the, you know, he won the first race and almost won the second and then got heat stroke in Texas, and that's so true. It's been following him since the beginning. It's just Tomac's going to do what he does, and the guys at Kawasaki have to be super bummed with what happened. Did you hear anything about what it might have been?
Clutch drivetrain, you know how those things are. Nobody really wants to admit it, even if they do know. Which they lie to us so much. I don't know when they're telling the truth. So I don't know. I kind of just chalk it up to failure. I don't know that I even like I said, when they tell me, I don't know if I believe them.
Yeah, it had to be the drivetrain because the back wheel was dragging.
But it was dragging and it was loosened up. It was dragging and loosened. I don't know. Seeing him push it locked up. Damn, that was savage.
That, but respect. You know, respect, yes, for trying to absolutely. Get the bike back. Yeah.
Well, yeah, he knew what was up. He needed to get it back and get it ready for the next moto because he wanted to go out and win. Although he didn't, he went and did what he does.
How does he respond this week? What do you think?
1-1.
You think so?
1-1. I don't. God, no, I don't. I have no idea. That's what I love about Eli. I don't have any idea what he's going to do or why he's going to do it. So
you know who went 1-1 last year there?
Who?
Marv.
Marv's good.
Yeah, Marv was so good last year there. And Dino got second, so that was a cool day. But and Tomac went something like 2.5 or 2.6.
Well, that was when he had like the mid-season slump because he was managing the title, which clearly he can't manage titles. He should just go out and win everything.
Yeah.
And hope it goes good. All right, we're going to move on to the 250s, so this isn't a four-hour podcast. All right. At number 10, I have Colt Nichols from Star Yamaha, who has entered the series coming off a pretty badly broken arm that he suffered. Was it Supercross practice? But no matter. Anyway, he's doing really well. The kid is talented. I mean, he comes in after just taking a lot of time off and just jumps right in there and seems to be fast. What do you think? Who's your 10?
My 10's the same. I kept Colt there. I had him there last week. I think he finished, like, I don't remember. What did he get last week? 13th? And I'm keeping him at 10. I think Colt's someone that's going to come on here late in the year. I think we're going to get a lot from him. I wouldn't be surprised to see him running towards the front here. He just needs a start, obviously. He was top 10 last year at Spring Creek. He just needs starts. Every time you see a first turn pile up, look in it. He's there every single time.
Yeah, well, when you qualify where he usually qualifies, about that 10th spot or so, you really put yourself right in that fire, and that 250 class gets a little crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
So, all right, at number 9, I have Kawasaki's newest 450 rider, Joey Savacci.
How do you put him way down there? I understand, you know, it's
what he's doing. I don't want to put him down there. I truly think this guy easily, if that bike doesn't break in Colorado, he's probably battling for the championship.
Very true.
Unfortunately, what we saw last week, I have a hard time putting him anywhere else. There's too many other good guys in that class for somebody who looks like they might not quite have his head totally in it, or he's in a slump. I really don't know what's wrong with him, but you don't have to be that far off in that 250 class to go from 5th to 15th. Just ask Justin Hill.
For sure. But even with all those problems, he was almost a top 10 guy, and he did win Spring Creek last year. I mean, the guy
Well, he won a lot of other races too.
Beast at Spring Creek, though. I just can't see. I almost moved him. I mean, you know, I moved him up and around. I almost moved him all the way up to 4. I'm like, I have him somewhere. Like, I think I ended up with him somewhere 6 or something. But I couldn't put him down that far. He deserves to be down that far right now. But I just couldn't do it. After, you know, looking at the results from Spring Creek, looking at how he is when he stays on two wheels, looking at the fact that he almost won a moto, and I just couldn't put him that far down.
Yeah, and then I got Chase Sexton at number 8. And you had Chase Sexton at 9.
I did.
Okay.
Yeah. So we're pretty similar on where Chase is. He's getting, you know, it's not like it used to be where these 16-year-olds can come in and just run with these men. It takes a minute. And I think that's where Chase is. I think Chase is going to be really good. He just needs a little confidence and needs better starts. When he gets the starts, he seems to run with these guys, but he can't come through the pack when he doesn't get the starts. And that's the big difference between him and an A-Mart or something like that.
Yeah, and then who did you have at number 8?
I had RJ Hampshire at number 8.
Okay. Yeah, I had RJ at 7. And now I really wanted to put RJ a little bit higher just after his ride. But after that crazy crash on the front straight, I don't know how healthy he is. He got stitches pretty bad, right?
Yeah, I don't know exactly what happened. I do know he got some kind of stitches or staples or something like that, but I don't know exactly the extent of the injury. I don't think it's anything that's going to slow him down, and he's super good at Spring Creek too. Another rider that has, you know, usually has one of his best races of the year in Millville.
And who did you have at number 7?
Number 7, I had Justin Cooper, who's been moving down my list little by little. It seems like he moves down one spot a week. Since like round 3 or 4.
Yeah, he's definitely going through that rookie slump. I really do think the week off will help him. I he was doing really well, and then it was like, wait, I can win this championship, and the wheels came off. It just didn't quite work out. I think he's going to get it together, and I feel good putting him at 6th. I would have put RJ ahead of him, except for I'm not real confident about the injury that RJ has, so that's why I had him. I actually had him at 6. And then who did you have at 6?
At 6, I had Joey Savacci.
Joey Savacci. So I did hear it was done at Kawasaki. Have you heard anything?
No more than just like rumors from other podcasts or Mathis or whatnot. I haven't talked to anybody. I'll talk to more people here at Washougal and find out a little bit more. But that's, I mean, I heard that a while ago, and off the record, I got hinted towards that from him. So I'm assuming it's locked in, because I see other comments from riders like Josh Grant or other riders who are making it clear that they're upset at Joey for some reason. And the only reason you would think that they're upset at him for some reason would be that he took his spot. You know, I think Joey's going to be good on the 450. I don't know how good, but
he's got a lot of potential. And if I'm Kawasaki, I'd definitely take him and give him a shot. Josh Grant's good, but Josh Grant's going to do about what he does.
Yeah.
And it's not like he's there week in and week out. He misses almost half the races. So I don't think it's not a huge gamble to take Joey. I think it's quite the opposite. It's actually a lot better deal for Kawasaki.
I 100% take Joey over Grant. And I think Grant's like Barcia did a lot for his career in the last couple of years too. It seems like when these guys get older, they seem to realize how much they love what they do. And they seem to start embracing the media and the fans. And Josh did a lot of that the last couple of years. And I think there's more upside for Joey. Like you talked about, we talked last week, how he could catch fire. He could be great in the 450. And I think the upside is huge for him. And I think the downside is right about where Josh Grant is. I think that's right about where Joey would be on the downside.
Okay. And then we've got Shane McElrath, Mr. Irrelevant, in number 5 is where I've got him.
Yeah, I've got Austin at number 5.
Jokingly. I think he's but because I always forget about him. He's there.
Yep.
He's good, and I just forget about him. And I think everyone else does. So.
Yeah, he turned a page this year outdoors, and you know that win obviously at Muddy Creek was a big part of that. But just all around, he's completely changed the way he attacks the track, where he expects to be, and I think a lot of that just has to do with Zach and Aaron leaving and these guys just knowing that, or not Zach and Aaron, but Zach and Jeremy being out and these guys knowing it was a little more up for grabs. I think Shane thinks he can beat Aaron Plessinger, but I don't think he thinks he can beat Zach Osborne or Jeremy Martin. So I think those two guys leaving brought up guys like Shane to take it to another level. And I think it's huge for him.
Yeah. And it was so Shane McElrath to take it, you know, a 3-2 for an overall.
That was awesome.
Quiet, under the radar. And who did you have at number 4?
Speaking of that, though, Shane, that went like 5-9 for 4th overall last week. He seems to do this.
Okay, and then you had it at number 5?
I had Austin Faulkner at number 5. And I don't, yeah, Austin's still a myth. I mean, Austin can win this weekend. It's just, who knows with that kid.
Easy. Let's not call him soft, Dan. I've heard people call him soft. Don't you call him soft. Those were some bad crashes. And he had bad ribs going in, a broken collarbone from Supercross.
He pulls off one race when he can easily finish and score points. And then the next moto comes out and gets third or something. I see where they're coming from.
Score points?
He's
already out of the
points.
Championship at this point. Why would he stay out there at Redbud?
Because that's what he's paid to do.
If he thinks he's got like a broken kneecap or there. Sometimes you got to go get it checked out. And then they say it's not broke, it's bruised, run it. And as long as you make sure it's not broken, sometimes you do have to pull in.
I'm just saying what people might be thinking. I mean, the guy says he's got broken ribs and pulls off at Hangtown, and the next day he's hucking a 200-foot booter at Pella. I love the kid. He's one of my.
Weird though. One day they hurt, one day they don't, the next day they hurt again. I'm going to cut the kid slack. I think he's a badass, and I think he's getting a bad rap. I don't think it's fair. So.
I get that. I've driven 5 hours to a race before thinking my ribs were fine, went out for practice, and 2 minutes later realized I couldn't race, and I burned $100 in gas, you know, $50 in entry fees or $100 in whatever it was, all the way there to realize I couldn't race when I went out in practice. I know how bad ribs are. This is why I think people think this. He's, rather than finish, he goes back to the truck, and I think someone like Mitch might be upset about that as well. Austin's a badass. He's going to win races. He might win titles. I just would like to see him out there. Just finish in motos if you can.
Yeah. I see where you're coming from. I disagree with you, but I see where you're coming from.
Fair enough.
Alex Martin, I have at number 3. Or actually, I had Faulkner at 4, and we just talked about him. And you had who at number 4?
I had McElrath at number four. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, and we forgot about him. Go figure. I skipped right over him.
McElrath?
I just about skipped over your number four. How ironic. It was McElrath.
We talked about him at your number five forever. So
I'm kidding. I just like to joke about Mr. Irrelevant. number three, Amart. At his home track. I really did want to put him ahead of Ferrandis and Plessinger.
You just can't do it.
I just can't. Those Yamahas are good, man. Those Yamahas are good. So I got him at number three.
You're turning into a Ferrandis fanboy, and I love it. I love the guy, so it's cool. But, yeah, you're such a Ferrandis fanboy. To put him above Amart at Amart's home track.
You can call me a fanboy, but when I put him up there, how did he do?
He's proving you right every week. I'm not arguing with you, but this is Alex Martin's backyard. Like, not like figuratively.
He doesn't even live
literally.
There. He's down in Florida all year.
I get it, but he grew up at this track. I think you got to put him above Dylan Ferrandis at his house.
I disagree. I got him at number three, and I got my boy Dylan Ferrandis at number two, and I want that dude to flip off Ferrandis like he did Marvin and just see how that turns out.
Yeah, Ferrandis might swing on the kid.
That's what I'm saying. I'm like, he's not going to take shit. He's that type of guy. I do believe he's a true bad guy, and we need that in our sport.
We need
somebody to embrace the bad guy. And I think everyone in our industry will be shocked at how popular the bad guy will become. We're going to have a stone cold Steve Austin, but he'll be a French guy named Dylan. So.
I don't know where Dylan was not good last year there. I mean, he was just okay. I don't know.
It was his first time there.
I get it. So he's now raced two motos there, and I get it. It's his first time most places last year.
I think you put way too much stock in the year before.
No, there's a lot of stock in how they perform on that soil, and I think it goes a long way.
I feel like it's the same soil at almost every round nowadays.
Yeah, this year they
how many tire changes have you seen made?
Well, you're not going to see many of those except for maybe Southwick. And even there,
back in the day, you had to do it all the time. So yeah, I don't think that matters that much.
This year they've done a lot more, though, it seems like Hangtown was a lot harder than it used to be. Lakewood was harder than it normally is. I mean, Hangtown wasn't what it was like in the 90s, but it was definitely a lot more hard pack and had a lot more chatter bumps. And hard pack type obstacles are forming in the bumps than it usually does. It's usually filled with those rice holes, and it's more of a wavy chop. But this year it was really hard packed. Lakewood was more hard packed. I think they're trying to leave the tracks a little bit more genuine to what kind of soil's there. I just think somewhere like Millville, if you're good there, you're good there. And when you've lived there your whole life, how can you discount Alex Martin?
When you live there,
I mean,
it's yours.
He literally rolled out of bed and rode every day there.
No, he didn't. Come on, man.
I know. I would have.
I'm sure
there.
He knows it pretty good, but I've seen him race there how many years in a row, and it's not like he's completely dominant there.
No, he's not dominant, but he's always on the podium.
He's good.
He was even on the podium in Cycle Trade. I don't think he's been off the podium in a while.
That's why I had him third.
Fair enough.
And then obviously we both have AP number one. I do believe I was a little worried. I was speculating that he had maybe some heat stroke or he was feeling tired. I think the week off is going to do him good. Coming off a 1-1 at Redbud when Amart really needed to make up points there and he didn't. And I feel like this that might have been the weekend that swung it for Aaron. What
do you think? Like, I'm curious what anybody thinks about that. I mean, the guy was so off the pace, and then he just shows up at Redbud and just spanks him. And he did that before with Glenn Helen and other rounds this year where he just didn't do something the week before, and then he just shows up and just, I'm going to spank you guys today. Was it the Motocross of Nations thing because he really wanted to be on the team? I mean, he was a different guy last weekend after having three okay races.
I speculate that he was fatigued and, you know, the heat was getting to him. And it's crazy how much you can dig down when you know you got the next week off. And I do believe that's what he did there at Redbud. He dug down, pushed at that extra limit. But he does have 2 weeks to recover. And I think we're going to see a good Aaron the rest of the way.
Yeah, I feel like it was Amart and AP's, you know, tryout for the Motocross Nations team last week. And obviously AP came out on top, and that's why we're hearing that, you know, the team's picked and AP is on it. So I think it was.
I didn't hear it was picked. Who's it, who is the team?
Well, what I'm hearing is Tomac, Barsha, and Plessinger, an all monster team.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty hard to argue. So,
yeah.
Anyway,
yeah,
speaking
those
of
are the three obvious picks right now. So, yeah.
Monster. We're going to. Okay. So that pretty much does it for this week's power ranking. So thank you, everybody. I appreciate you tuning in. We are going to add a little bit of a bonus segment here. We're going to talk about Chad Reed and some news that dropped this week about a retirement with a question mark there.
Yep.
I think he's gone. What do you think, Dan?
Oh, man, I don't know. I do know that he's laid it on the line. He said, you know, I need a ride. I'm not going to do it on my own if I don't have a ride for 2019. And when Chad Reed says ride, he doesn't mean, you know, cycle trader or something, giving him a bike and parts and that kind of support. When Chad's talking about a ride, he's saying, I need a factory ride or I'm retiring in 2019. He went on to say that, which I agree with, and I don't know that you do, that he promotes products as good as anybody, that, you know, he is as popular as anyone, his global reach, and he feels that he deserves, you know, just for his ability to sell stuff and his following, to be on a factory team, results or not, kind of how he laid it down.
And, yeah, he sold the shit out of those Yamahas 2 years ago when he badmouthed it and nobody wanted to buy them.
I don't remember him badmouthing them that bad. I do remember him complaining that they were chasing setup with the bike, but I don't remember him thrashing them. But you remembered it differently. So, and I took what he said a little differently than you said you did. I did a little research after you told me that, and even interviews that I interviewed him, he just would talk about how they're chasing stuff. And he did say stuff like, you know, if they would have done what I told them to do, if they would have went the direction I told them to go. And he did toss blame quite a bit at the team.
Well, and I spend a lot of time in Yamaha dealerships.
Yeah.
And they are not happy to read. They, whether that's fair or not, that's what's out there. So, yeah, if I'm a team and I've got a second bike, no, I'm not putting Chad Reed on it. I'm not putting him on it. I don't like it. He's going to run. He's going to have Eli. You know, he's Chad's not happy. Everybody knows. I think his best bet would be to continue what he did last year, come in healthy. Him without a broken leg is a guy who could battle up there inside the top five. What we saw last year was not Chad Reed. I don't want to see him go out that way. He's one of the greatest riders ever to race the sport of Supercross. And I don't want to see him exit that way, but nobody's giving him a factory ride. And if he gives the sport that ultimatum, he's gone. There's just no other way. I thought that he was going to keep that same team, run the Husqvarna, and by five rounds in, you know Husqvarna is going to be giving him factory stuff, and he's going to be gaining that momentum. And yes, as a popular rider, he sells energy drinks. He sells products that involve branding, but it's your bike and your product. Like, if it's the bike, he doesn't sell. Everything else, absolutely. 100% agree with you.
Well, most of the money spent right now is by energy drinks right now. Chad Reed has, I don't get this sport. I really don't. I don't understand how someone like James Stewart, someone like Chad Reed, those type of guys are still on the couch and they're not. I mean, maybe it's because of what you said, because they don't support the bike and they don't support the team the way they should. But this guy has a gigantic reach. His reach is incredible, and it's worldwide. He's got nearly 1 million Instagram followers, 850,000. Practically the same thing on Facebook. The guy is revered and loved and idolized all over the world, and people want to wear the gear he has on. People want to follow him. People want to. Who cares if Chad Reed don't think the bike looks great? If you're a Chad Reed fan and you want to look like Chad, you're going to buy the damn bike he has on because you want the kit. It's Chad Reed sells products, period. When I put Chad Reed on the website, as a website owner, when I put the name Chad Reed on something, I'm going to get 100 times the views I get from anything else. And that's the same with the James Stewarts and all these guys that for some reason the sport doesn't understand. I get what you're saying. He didn't do
Hold
a
on.
Lot for the bike.
So,
but I don't think that's the number
Suzuki,
one thing.
Should Suzuki just have Travis Pastrana race? He's got a ton of Instagram followers.
Well, that's – come on. We're going to a point.
That's what
I mean,
you're
Pastrana's
saying.
Not going to make the main event,
popularity.
Though. it should be more about popularity than that, but Pastrana's a different story. He's not going to make the main event, obviously. Chad Reed was on the podium in 2017, so obviously just within a year ago, when he felt comfortable, or what you say he was saying he was chasing the bike, he was on the podium. So, I mean, he's not that far off, and he can be back there. He obviously came in this year. The fact is, Chad Reed has probably a bigger reach than anybody. Anytime I put him on the website, it blows up. His autograph line's around the corner, and maybe if you can calm him down and put in a don't badmouth the bike clause. Who knows?
Yeah, I see where you're coming from, and he does sell product. I didn't say he didn't sell product. He doesn't sell the machine. He blames equipment. That is a chronic problem. Suzuki fired him after he won the Supercross title because of what he did. It's not something that is new to him. So that's why he's not getting a ride. Not because of the reach. The sport's not doing him any disservice. The energy drink sponsors, gear sponsors. What's that?
The sport's doing itself a disservice, not Chad Reed. Chad Reed's fine. If he has to retire,
the sport will be fine. That's the great thing about the sport is when somebody leaves, somebody else shows up. Everyone said that about basketball. It's going to be over when Michael Jordan's gone. Well, then there's LeBron. There's always somebody else.
You would think so, somebody, but nobody right now has the star power of a James Stewart or a Chad Reed. I don't know why, but nobody does.
Well, when it was Chad Reed and Kevin Windham that one year, they said Chad Reed didn't have star power. Trust me, it will. Eli Tomac in 3 years is going to have that star power despite his personality, whatever personality he has or lack of or whatever. He's going to have that. He already has almost that star power. I don't know how you can say that somebody doesn't. Eli does. Eli moves that needle right now. Every time I write about him, if I write anything even close to bad, people want to crucify me.
Yeah, if you're at, it's more like Villopoto. He was on the level of like a Villopoto as far as stuff, but I remember, like, I think it was Racer X did a thing where the most searched riders in the industry, and Villopoto was on his fourth championship, and he was, like, seventh. And I think that's kind of where Eli Tomac is. The one person we have right now at the front of the 450 class that they can move the needle is Ken Roczen. And if we get him to where he's winning, we'll definitely have that star power of a Chad Reed. And Ken Roczen, I think, definitely has that. And I don't know why I overlooked it when I said that. But no, I don't think Tomac or anybody. I think a Webb would have that if he starts winning. Barcia, if he starts winning, people
Plessinger,
that speak their mind.
Cincerillo, we got guys right around the corner that have that. And like I said, we lose one, we're gonna pick up one. It may take a couple years, and yeah, there's a couple down years in the middle, but the sport's gonna be just fine. It's better with Chad Reed, but giving the sport an ultimatum, Factory or out. Unfortunately, he's out, man.
How is that? That's not a bad ultimatum. I don't think that's a cocky or bad ultimatum, and I think he's prepared to go out. I don't think he was saying, like, you know, like he's going to leave bitter if he doesn't get it. He's just saying, I don't want to do it on my own anymore. I don't want to be a boss anymore. He's selling his facility. He's selling all the stuff that goes with the facility, and he just says, if I'm going to race, I want to do it for a team, and I think he deserves that. You don't. But I guess it'll all come down to it. I think you're right. I think it's going to end up, he's not going to be on a team next year. I think we're probably going to see him retire. I can't see him.
Don't get me wrong. I want him to race. I want him to continue the same program he did last year. And I think he'd do great with that program.
Yeah.
But basically what I'm not saying he should go or I'm happy he's retired. I'm saying ultimatum, wrong way to go. That's it.
Well, you said that, you know, if he showed up on a Husky, he'd end up getting picked up on a – he rode a Husky this year, and they never got any help. So
it's because he was hurt, and he didn't – his results were horrible. Results speak. If he's on the Husky not hurt and battling up near the top five, he's going to get help.
I get it. And Husky probably got more out of Chad Reed choosing them. He could have chose any bike last year. I think Husky got quite a bit out of him choosing that bike last year.
Possibly because he chose it and they didn't hire him and he didn't have the opportunity to trash the bike. I'm just saying it's a pattern. If it happens more than three times, it's going to happen again. I'm sorry. You can't teach an old dog new tricks there.
If you said that about James Stewart, I'm completely on board. I just don't feel Chad trashes bikes. Like you say, I think he does mention things that are wrong, but when he's comfortable, that's the one thing with Chad. When he's comfortable, he's off the chain. Good.
I am speaking for dealerships who sell the product.
I get it.
They're the ones telling me this, not I mean, I'm watching it, but they're the ones that are mad.
Fair enough. All right. Well, all right. we talked about Chad Reed, and I won that argument, just so everybody knows.
He didn't win.
I win.
Anyway. How do you win an argument?
We
both have our sides.
You announced to a podcast that you won.
Why don't you
won.
Do a Facebook poll on who won the argument, Dan? Oh, my God. Yeah, I'll just leave it at that.
Fair enough.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for listening. And until next week, everybody, I'm Chris. That's Dan. And stay out of jail.